This episode is brought to you by the Webcomic Beacon 2012 Spring Comic Book Giveaway. This spring, we're going to be giving away 4 copies of the volumes 1 and 2 of Family Bones. That is based on a true story about Ray and Faye Copeland, the serial killers. And along with that, there's going to be 1 CD pack giveaway of The Boobles, which is a mammary parody of Beatles songs. So you can go ahead and check it out at webcastbeacon.com/giveaway for more information on how to enter and a little bit more information on the things you can win.
Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Hello, it's Sunday, February 19th, 2012, and this is episode 55 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from alexisguy.net, Alex Heberling.
Good morning.
And our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
What's up, Buttercup?
And I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com, and let's see what's in the news. Our top story today, those wonderful people, our friends over at Penny Arcade, have been assisting out with a new public service announcement campaign about the ESRB ratings, the little ratings that you see on video games. They have been doing some artwork and caricatures based upon real parents and gamers trying to portray the perspective and give more information about those ESRB ratings for people who really don't know what they mean yet. They've got some great quotes over from this story that we've got over at thetimesunion.com over in their business section, talking about, you know, some of the new stars that are being used from the real stories that are being used for the campaign. And then next up, over in our Buzz section, we're going to go ahead and go with an interview from Doug Tenapel and Ethan Nicole. Doug Tenapel is the creator of Rat Fist, 13 graphic novels, some TV shows, movies, as well as the iconic video game character Earthworm Jim. And Ethan Nicole, the creator of Axe Cop. Boy, there's a range there. Along with Bearmageddon and Chumble Spuzz, talked with Jason Brubaker about their life in comics. It's an audio podcast, audio recording, so you'll have to go through and listen to it, but it does give some terrific information about the system that they use and what's done with it. Also from the world of the fringes is over from comicsbeat.com. Renowned creator Jonan Vasquez, best known for, I believe, Milk and Cheese and the very popular Invader Zim, is coming to DC Comics to do digital comics. His digital comic Beyond the Fringe, based upon the critically acclaimed Fox TV show Fringe, adds a new roster for creators, and Jonan will be joining, I believe, in about issue 5 or 6. So we, with the unique style that of writing that he has, that's always going to be an interesting thing to do. We've got another interview from Jeff Parks and Erica Moen. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right.
Moen.
Yep.
Moen.
Thank you.
Moen.
Moen. With one of the following stories. Well, Jeff's going to be here some Moen. But they are members of Periscope Studios and do some webcomics themselves. They're bringing their Portland-based webcomic, Bucko, to the internet. Boy, that's great. How can you have a webcomic without the internet? But it really is, it's a transition from, again, one medium to the other, showing that greater capability of the internet being reached. And finally, over at the Washington Post, boy, we're getting some heavy-duty news this week. We have from the nom de tome, Boulet, French cartoonist Gilles Rousseau, who is called the first godfather of the Paris Comic Strip Blog Festival, about a 24-hour comic that he did, well, which he admits he did in 26 hours, called The Darkness. It's drawn the attention of a number of notables, such as Scott McCloud, who is basically the godfather of the 24-hour comic and a strong proponent for the infinite canvas of webcomics, Kate Beaton, and a number of others. I know Eric wishes he was here right now so he could rattle on about Kate Beaton. But it is drawing a lot of attention from people because of this. But let's go ahead and go on over. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that we've got one other story in our buzz. And folks, this is the section of the podcast where if you've got people underage or do not like distasteful things, that you may want to turn them off for just a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll give a beep, beep, beep. Okay, that's it. If you listen beyond this and don't come back after the story, it's your own fault.
Are you red, Tom? A bit embarrassed?
No, but I don't want some of the kids to be traumatized, but we have. Webcomic creator Oni has been drawing attention to some of the plight of superhero comics, many of the same topics covered by the Women in Refrigerators group and Girl Power and other organizations, by drawing pictures of superheroines, or female superheroes, as she says, as vaginas. No, folks, I'm not kidding. She has a number of different superheroes, including the examples shown here of Batgirl, Supergirl, and Wonder Woman, as female genitalia. That's right.
I believe that's Batman and Superman, but I may be wrong.
No, you're wrong. That's the yellow bat bear, and that's the shorts. Yes, folks, I've taken a look at this stuff. Yeah. And my life will never be the same. But she does bring up the subject of, you know, DC complaining they can't find any women to hire, and some of the way that they treat female characters. It's stuff that we've heard and deserves to be repeated from the Women in Refrigerators group, as we said. But it is certainly a unique way of getting attention for it. And you can see this article, if you want to, over at OneZoomiverse, ZUMIVERSE.com. And with that, folks, you can go ahead and listen back into the podcast. You can have your kids back in the room now as we go over to our business section. And Jason, you go ahead and take it away.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Kids, it's story time. No more snickering. Going on to the business, a little bit more fallout from the Gary Friedrich case as people begin to decide that they also need to be thinking about the convention sketches because of the misreading of the case in itself. Well, what we're finding out now as the case has expanded, we're seeing that the reason that Marvel had gone after Friedrich was not because he was selling hand-drawn sketches, but it was some of Marvel's material. Still, there is debate now as to whether Marvel will be going after people at conventions who do sketches for collectors in their own personal collections. Over at Robot 6, we have news about Sean Gordon Murphy, who is one of the artists for Vertigo's Joe the Barbarian, has said that he is no longer going to do any sketches for congoers because there's just too much risk. This is based on a Facebook page from Stephen Bissett, best known for Swamp Thing, who had spoken to his own legal advisor, Mr. John Mark Lofficer. I hope that I pronounced that right, who has said that this is the first time that Marvel is using convention sales of copyright material characters as a weapon. And they're, of course, perfectly entitled to do so legally, and he is speaking to going after people for doing these sketches. But what it does mean from now on that everyone here who is doing sketches of Marvel characters for money at conventions or selling sketchbooks containing pictures of Marvel characters, that Marvel can legally go after you. Something else that needs to be pointed out, and that is also pointed out in this article, artist Phil Noto has gone over Twitter and saying that there is a big difference between mass-produced prints and sketchbooks and original art. Print books are a gray area where companies can claim copyright if they choose, but you're completely free to sell a drawing for someone's personal collection. So at this point, there is a lot of fear, but if we go on to our next article, which kind of gives us a better idea of what Marvel's perspective is on it. If we go over to Blaster, which is a subsidiary of Sci-Fi, they interview Joe Quesada about the Ghost Rider lawsuit, and there's a lot of interesting things revealed. For the last question, what they're saying is, no, they're not really going to go after every person who's at a con who does a sketch of a Marvel artist. They say that they want to promote the characters. They want this to be done. But they also go on to say that the $17,000 that they are asking from Friedrich is not a penalty in any way, according to Quesada. That, in fact, it is a number agreed upon to have Gary's case dismissed. Now, I don't know how you really want to read that. From my personal view, I still think it is a penalty. Also, something else that's very interesting about this article over at Blaster, the one question that Quesada did not answer and just really chose to make no comment on is when they asked, does Marvel feel a responsibility now to help or support the writers and artists who helped build the Marvel Universe, and in particular the artists who had a direct hand in creating the kind of franchise characters that can support multi-million dollar movie and licensing endeavors? Quesada chose not to reply on that. So it really changes the perspective for a lot of people. And if you're planning to work for one of the big two like Marvel or DC, and that moves us on to our next article over at Escapist Magazine, an actual video, which talks about how the perspective of comics is changing and how our own perspective of, who do you want to work for? Do you want to go to a person, or do you want to go to one of the big twos like Marvel and DC and have your whatever ideas that you have brought up? Do you feel that those are safe with those? And based on longstanding history, it doesn't look like that. And if you go to The Escapist and watch the video, The Big Picture, done by Bob Chipman, he does a really good analysis of, one, why there probably will never be another Watchmen, where there will never be another case like that where someone wants to come in and give original IP, even though we know that Moore's characters are based on characters that they had gotten before. But that there's a lot of question as to what's going to happen with what happens when you go and work for one of these big two. Finally, we are go to an article at Parker Space, which is on how to co-create comic books. Now, if you look at this article, you know that it's more of a traditional comic perspective, but it also comes with an artist from Periscope Studios, another name that we've had mentioned before. And what they're doing here is they go into analysis of ownership of the comic, the roles that different people will play, be it the artist or the writer, how to split up the work, and what challenges you're going to face. So that can be found at Parker Space. That's it for the business section. I'm going to move it on to Alex.
Actually, we're going to take our first break here, and we will be back with Alex and the educational news right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 55 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Make sure to see our stories and much more over at our webpage at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. As we start back up with our news, and let's go over to our education news with Alex Eberling.
Today in education, via comicstalk.com and goreina.com, Scholastic Books is hosting a graphic novel webinar aimed at teachers who want to educate their students about graphic novels and comics. Participating artists include Jeff Smith of Bone, Raina Tegelmeyer of Smile, and Kazu Kibushi of the Amulet series. Interested teachers can sign up their classes for this event at scholastic.com, which will take place via live webcast at 1 p.m. Eastern on March 7th. Over on MakingComics.com, Scott King offers a guide on how to write a successful comic pitch, also known as the elevator pitch. Starting with the basic premise of your comic and building on that to write a good elevator pitch is an essential tool for every comic creator, nay, every writer of fiction. So go check that out. And finally, on graphics.com, we have the Ten Commandments of Color Theory. This article is a good introduction to the wide and vast study of color theory and covers different color models, synchronizing your color profiles between graphics applications, the changes that colors experience in relationship to their neighboring hues, and the egregious crime of using beige to attract attention to an element, among others. That is it for education today. Now it's back to Tom for our technology news.
Yeah, I think using beige on a website should be a capital offense.
Let's join the army.
Over in the tech news, let's go ahead and start off with the much-debated net neutrality. The Securities Exchange Commission for the United States has told AT&T and other telecommunications companies that they need to have a resolution supporting wireless net neutrality in up with the annual shareholder votes. Over at businessweek.com, they have more about the article and say that in a letter posted on the SEC website, the agency asserted that net neutrality, the idea that internet service providers must treat traffic equally, which is a very simplified version of what it really is, has become a, quote, significant policy consideration, close quote, and can no longer be excluded from shareholder ballots. AT&T, Verizon Communications, and Sprint Nextel Corporation must now grant shareholder requests for vote this year on resolutions that would support net neutrality. Again, a quote from the SEC letter, in view of the sustained public debate over the last several years concerning net neutrality and the internet, and the increasing recognition that the issues raise significant policy considerations, we do not believe that AT&T may omit the proposal from its proxy materials. So expect to see a lot of stuff coming about net neutrality up in the news in the near future. One of our more commonly discussed topics has been piracy, and there's an article over from Fourth Letter, that's 4thletter.net, about the scans which have been released from Marvel. And are they coming from Marvel themselves, or some, at least someone inside the House of Ideas? There have been several clues within the release scans of a number of Marvel comics showing that they may not just be someone going through and scanning the purchased comic book, but there are there are graphical errors, there are typos, there are missing word balloons and such that suggest that they are coming from someone within Marvel. If so, this may be either a big hugaboo and something that is misinterpreted, or on the flip side, there was a big rumor going around that the release of the new Doctor Who episodes from the BBC were being leaked out by the Beeb themselves. So it may be a publicity gimmick.
Conspiracy.
And finally, we've got an article over at Designer Daily, that's designer-daily.com, talking about the HTAccess file. For the tech heads out there who know or don't know, the HTAccess file is a file on a subdirectory on your web server that allows people to do different things with your with it. And some examples that it gives is how to protect from hot linking to your items on your server, how to prevent people from browsing the directory, how to display a custom 404 error page, and so much more. For people who run a web server or have a website, especially as webcomic people, this is a great way of learning a little bit more about the technology that goes into this. And on that, we're going to go ahead and head back to Alex for some of our tidbits.
Yay, tidbits. All right, first up on scarygaram.com via flame.com, John Allison is experimenting with an optional subscription/donation model for his comics. Subscribers, or patrons, or whatever you want to call them, will receive the good gift of gratitude from the artist and the satisfaction of directly supporting the arts in exchange for their contributions in various levels that range from $3 to $100 annually. Allison says, quote, my comics will always be free to read, unquote. So if you're not the merchandising type and wish to support the artist of the comics you know and love, head on over to Bad Machinery and check it out. We wish John the best of luck with this experiment. Via boingboing.net, Mark V., is the creator of Electric Puppet Theater, and he uses the power of Inkscape, which is an open source vector imaging program, and Git, a file revision history tracking program, to animate his creative process. Using the version history of the files tracked by Git, he is able to animate the progressive changes to each page of his comic, and then he then pieces multiple pages together into a chapter-long collage of the pages in his videos. It's a pretty cool effect, as each page appears as a sketch, and then colors and details appear cascading over each page until every page in the chapter is complete. And you can check out a tutorial on how Mark does this and how to do it yourself on the Electric Puppet Theater website at eptcomic.com. And finally, our good friend Sean Kleefeld is at it again over at MTV Geek. He gives us a rundown on the differences between marketing and salesmanship and the roles of social media in both. And it's definitely worth a read because it's a lot more detailed and nuanced than my summary here.
Okay, and with that, let's go ahead and go over to Jason for our oddities section.
Okay, thanks again, Tom. Two stories this week. One is a direct link to an Imgur image. Many of you have probably seen this meme going around now, which is the What People Actually Think I Do meme, which you can go and look for it for yourself. I personally am really wishing this meme, the full disclosure, I wish this meme would die. But if you take a look at that, you will get to see a funny little caption about what people think webcomic creators do. Next on the docket, we have a new story from Comics Alliance about comic book men, the Kevin Smith television show on AMC. Well, as you know, if you've looked at Comics Alliance's site, they reviewed the show and didn't really give it a good review. Well, that actually prompted one of the stars of the show to reply back to Comics Alliance, and you could actually see what he said. This is from, one second, bear with me, Sims. One of the stars of the show has come back and basically blasted Comics Alliance for really having the audacity to put their show down. So go over and you can take a look at it, have a little good laugh, and if you are in any way a fan of the Kevin Smith show, I would like to point out my own biases against it. I really don't think that it's a good representation of comic books fans and of comic book employees in particular. And if you ever do happen to go down to Red Bank, New Jersey to go to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, tell them hello. See what it's really like to be down there. And then once you've gotten what it really is like, I recommend that you go the next town over to the Comics Crypt, which is actually full of people who will help you out and be nice. All right, and that's it for the oddities.
And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our next break. When we come back, we're going to be having a discussion panel, and we will be including in guest Kelly Turnbull from Manly Guys Doing Manly Things. So go ahead and stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this.
The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits.
Renew!
Sigh.
Renew!
What's this red blinking light?
I had that removed twice. Did you know that the MPAA film rating system began on November 1st?
No wonder we get all moody in the winter.
I know. You know, I wasn't going to say that.
Would you like some syrup?
Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
Welcome back to the second half of the Webcomic Beacon newscast, our discussion panel. Let me go ahead and reintroduce our usuals from alexisguy.net, Alex Heberling.
Hi.
From bladebunny.com, via cell phone, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, everyone.
Our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hiya.
And our celebrity guest today is Kelly Turnbull from Manly Guys Doing Manly Things over at thepunchlineismachismo.com.
Hello.
I want to go ahead and thank you for joining us today, Kelly. And let me go ahead and start off by saying, asking you, what exactly are you up to right now other than doing your webcomic?
Actually, the webcomic is what I'm doing, like, right at this moment. I've got Photoshop open, and I'm doodling away in there. But we are, I think the most recent thing I've been doing is, I can't talk about a whole lot of business stuff because it's all, like, you know, non-disclosure agreements. But I think the most recent thing that I can mention are some MetLife commercials I've been doing with PSYOP and some, I don't know if you've heard the character Fred Figglehorn, like, on YouTube. He's one of those kids who makes like $100,000 a year on his YouTube account, and his whole character is just some like annoying little kid with his voice pitch processed. He's not a little kid anymore, so we're making like an animated series out of his exploits. So that's all online. I don't know how much people feel like going and watching them.
But, oh wow! Everybody pays all this bills. Money. Yeah. Well, let me ask. With your webcomic, Manly Guys Doing Manly Things, how did you get started with that?
I actually did it originally for the Escapist webcomic contest that was a couple years ago, I guess almost, like, exactly 2 years ago. And I came in as a runner-up on it, but enough people were complaining that I wasn't the winner that I was like, well, I may as well just keep this going on my own. And it kind of worked out for the best because the contract had to provide at least, like, 2 pages a week consistently. And I, like, as soon as the contest ended, I got my job back on Ugly Americans because, like, it was kind of down for the season break. And so it was like, there's no way I could have kept it going, like, at the speed that they wanted and worked on the show. And it's like, if you have the choice between, like, you know, starting a new webcomic off the ground or, like, working for Comedy Central, it's, like, not a super hard choice.
Now, if it had been Cartoon Network, that would have been a more difficult choice.
I don't know. I like the stuff they're making these days.
But let's go ahead and go back to our discussion topics. We're going to go ahead and start off. Our top discussion topic today is going to be the Gary Friedrich case again. There's a lot more information which is coming out. As you heard from our story above, Gary Friedrich, one of the people who created the character Ghost Rider, has sued for some of the rights with the original Ghost Rider movie coming out, and with the second movie out now, it's drawn attention again. He lost that case and was actually countersued by Marvel.
Let me just jump in here. Here's my opinion. Marvel has one of the best legal departments in the world and one of the worst PR departments in the world at the same time. it's unbelievably, I mean, it's very good legal standing, but it's just unbelievably bad timed on this.
I'm sorry, I'm so bad at like reading when someone's finished, but people have, they've pointed out that he was sort of the one who, like, kicked the hornet's nest. Like, he came forward saying that, like, you know, he deserved, and, I mean, there was definitely a basis for the case. They mentioned in the article that, it's kind of like, when, what's her name, Peggy Lee sued over Lady and the Tramp, and she was saying that, like, when the movie came out, the rights that she sold, like, they weren't, you know, it just covered the theater rights, and they're, like, VHS didn't exist then, so when they imported it to that, like, that was a whole new basket of rights they had to buy from her. So they probably would have had grounds for that, but just as, I don't know, like...
And a similar story, as we discussed last week, was the Marv Wolfman lawsuit, which has made him persona non grata over at Marvel over the rights for the character Blade, and it was found for Marvel in that case as well that it was a work for hire. But the countersuit against Friedrich wasn't. This is where a lot of the discussion is going through, because people are saying that it's about him doing sketches as of Johnny Blaze and Ghost Rider at conventions and advertising himself as the creator of Ghost Rider. But it looks like he's also been selling other merchandise, such as T-shirts, with artwork of Ghost Rider comics, of their covers, from art from Phil Flug, not his own art, and many other things, and that's what's been going on.
Yeah, when they were billing him as the creator, like, they were just saying he's the creator, they weren't saying he's the writer behind Ghost Rider, so, like, all the stuff, like, that's what he was being countersued over, was, you know, it was, what is his name, Mark Pflug or something?
But, yeah, Phil Pflug, yeah, I believe.
It feels a little like, you know, if you drew fan art and then found out that the creator was, like, selling it. I don't know, there's actually a thing a few years back, I don't know if they still do it, but Adult Swim used to run that kind of reel of like Metalocalypse fan art, just as like a bump for the station. And I remember there being some kind of fuzzle on the internet about people who hadn't sent their art in. It was showing up, like it was just kind of being picked off the internet or submitted on their behalf. And I don't remember hearing how that resolved itself, but people were like very angry that, you know, this fan art they'd done of characters they don't own showing up on TV without their permission, because like, yeah, they, I mean, it's still your art. And it seems kind of like, you know, it's like if the guy who created the character is just taking this art that he didn't do and doesn't belong to him and selling it for his own profit.
Yeah, and also we've got the input in from comic creator, writer, artist Ty Templeton over at his blog, tytempletonart.wordpress.com, mm-hmm. which is a little comic of showing some of the furor about it between the standard comic book fan and the old lovable character of Forwish Man from Marvel.
And yeah, I thought it was a little
different spin on it.
It was a little unfortunate that he chose to stage that with, like, you know, the big bully is the, you know, the guy standing up for Friedrich, and, like, the little, it's like, oh, poor little Marvel, so disenfranchised.
It's a myopic view.
Why is everybody being so mean to me?
I put it up on, like, Tumblr, because it was, you know, it was making the round. And there were a bunch of people who were like, I didn't even read it because as soon as it was like, oh, you know, this calm little rational guy versus a giant foaming idiot, like, you know, it was like, I'm not going to take this seriously. And it was like, man, that's a shame because he's got like a good point there.
He's got some very good points. Go ahead.
He has good points until the end. I mean, the 17,000 is just a dumb move on Marvel's point. Yes, Gary Friedrich was pushing the envelope, but you just don't do that if you're a large corporation. It's just not a smart thing to do.
Oh, yeah,
it looks very puny.
Well, it's
also 17,000.
We can actually contrast that with a decade or two ago, the Paramount push against Star Trek fan sites, where they were sending out cease and desist orders. The big difference between this and that was the Paramount was against fan sites where they weren't making any money. And Friedrich was. And it wasn't just pushing the envelope. He was using artwork that wasn't his. He didn't draw it. If it had been original sketches that he had done or original art and colorations that he put on T-shirts, that would be pushing the envelope. It wasn't. It was, and I apologize for mangling the name earlier, it's Mike Pflug, who was the original artist, along with the great Roy Thomas, who was the creator of Ghost Rider.
But see, there's the thing. Then it's Mike Pflug's point part too soon. It is not Marvel's part.
And I think, like,
No, because Pflug has nothing to do with it. The character is owned by Marvel.
They did say that Pflug was, like, at the court case or whatever to speak against him. Like, I don't know, it might kind of be one of those things where, you know, like, your two kids are in the sandbox fighting, so you step in, like, you know, if you're Marvel, like...
No, but see, Marvel just killed itself with it. I mean, it would just, they had a legal argument, they have no PR foot to stand on.
And there's the big thing, it's absolutely, they are absolutely right in what they did, they were protecting their copyright and trademark, but on the flip side, it is a PR nightmare.
Yeah, but how much? I mean, we're looking at the sales figures for, say, the Ghost Rider movie that came out this week. It's number two. I mean, they only made $7 million with a $75 million budget. But still, it was the number two last weekend.
Yeah, but from what I've heard, don't expect it to stay there for very long.
Well, yeah.
But I also want to go
ahead. That's a bad movie. here is the other thing. I keep on saying it's a PR nightmare. It was a PR nightmare, but it also shows that comic book fans don't care. They can foam and they can rage, and they will still see your movie.
Absolutely.
If it's a bad movie, it will fail afterwards. The opening night is all PR.
And, it's like I I totally disagree with the counter. See, like, you know, I think that, you know, in a perfect world, Marvel would just, like, you know, eat the cost, and if they're making a big budget movie, the creator would get something. But it seems almost like they're trying to, like, make an example out of him. Like, you know, it's like, if we just preemptively do this, we won't have people, like, you know, suing us down the line over, like, every character. And it's like, yeah, it's shitty, but I kind of, like, you know, see why they would try to, like, just go nip it in the bud.
Right. Oh, yeah. And let's legally, also say, I mean, because as Ty Templin pointed out in that strip that he did, Friedrich is not going to be paying anything. We have a article from Neil Adams, I mean, phenomenal artist and owner of Continuity Studios, who has also been a strong supporter of creator rights and supporting the original creators. He's been someone who's really been behind the Jack Kirby scenes, who comes out and says, you know, I mean, Friedrich, he is sick. He's about to lose his house, but Friedrich will tell you he's not destitute, but he does need help. He says things like, I mean, Adams will offer to pay his mortgage himself if he doesn't get any help. But it does come down to how he's been supporting and trying to support people behind the scenes, such as Gary Friedrich, the late Dave Cockrum, who also came through things, but as I said, the Jack Kirby's and all the other creators of people who got caught up in bad copyright laws from 30, 40, 50, and so on years ago.
Yeah, to bring it back to webcomics, though, and to bring it back to this question, one of the problems this is going to cause for Marvel is that people are not going to want to make new products for them and new IPs. And we've had a couple of news articles about this of, you know, they're just recycling everything that came from the 50s because creators aren't willing to sign over rights anymore. And now we have a situation where, let's say you have a successful webcomic, and Marvel says, why don't you sign over the IP to us? No one would do it. I mean,
well,
no one
that's
like
a species, because the copyright laws between when stuff like this happened with Friedrich in the 70s, the early 70s, and now, because of the Siegel and Schuster decisions, because of the Jack Kirby decisions, I mean, it's a completely different scene now. And a lot of people are taking this as if it were the early 70s in copyright laws instead of what's happening now. Now, even as I said, Adams is saying this was...
But would anyone on this panel...
Well, I don't know, like, would... Marvel doesn't seem... Like, does Marvel have a thing that...
Would
like,
anyone
Vertigo
sign
that's...
anything over to Marvel?
Well, this is a specious argument because it isn't just signing things over nowadays. They, especially with all the attention that was brought up because of Siegel and Schuster and Kirby, if people are going to have an original character that they want to be created, now it's either going to be the work for hire, and the contracts are different nowadays, so that people would still
be seeing
something. I would sign it over in an instant.
Better.
I feel like if you're making an original character for existing universe like the Marvel stuff, then it seems like it might be kind of hard to pull it out after. Like I forget the names of everybody involved, but there was a case a few years back of a guy who he worked for Sonic Comics, and there was like an original character that he made up for it that he fought very viciously to get back after he was done. And so when, you know, he got the character back, but it's like, what are you going to do with this, like, Sonic character now? That you, like, you can't use the rest of the Sonic universe to write stories about them. You've just got this, like, you know, disassociated Sonic character kind of, like, straight away from the herd. And I feel like if you made a character and sold it to Marvel and it was used and, like, you know, I made a new villain for the Fantastic Four, and then afterwards you were like, I want my character back, like, what would you do with your character after? Because, like, you can't, you know, let him play with the other kids anymore. Like, you know, I couldn't see. I mean, like, I wouldn't take, like, the main character in my comic and go say, like, hey, Marvel, do you want this guy? Like, it, you know, he's kind of got to exist in his pocket universe.
Yeah. I mean, but this is the problem. We have the situation where the creators are now in a situation where they're saying, never give up your rights to your work. And this is a very strong sort of impulse among webcomics. Never sign any of your characters over because you may be creating the next Superman. And that's sort of the narrative that all the creators have. And so companies can't get ownership to any particular product because they can't get ownership to any product, they don't invest in it, and they don't develop the characters. And so we have a situation where Marvel and DC are recycling their old characters, and any of the new characters can't get into this stream of more media exposure because the companies don't want to invest in them. And we've got this sort of this situation now of deadlock. Of these two parties.
Well,
now
I don't know, any place that you would work, you'd have to sign over rights like that. Like, I think if anything, at least this, like, kind of all this legal fuss going on now is creating a precedent so people kind of know what to watch out for, and they can protect themselves better if by, like, learning from example. But, like, you know, if you want to sell anything, you're going to have to, like, sign some sort of agreement saying that, you know, like if I went and pitched a show, like, I'd have to sign over the rights to those characters to the studio that was picking it up and the network that was picking it up, and, you know, like...
Absolutely. I mean, we can look back as recent as the 90s to where fan favorite Rob Liefeld had his character of Cable, which he created for Marvel Comics. And this was after all the hubbub from Jack Kirby and Siegel and Schuster. So, I mean, any contracts that he signed, he either didn't read or signed them willingly. Either one, that character belongs to Marvel now. So, I mean, it's a situation nowadays, it's caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware, but also let the seller beware.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, if you want your characters out there, like, attached to a big company like that, it's like there are certain, I don't know, bullets you're going to have to bite. But actually, I think Rob Liefeld kind of, like, just on the subject of him, he brings up another, like, good point that I think Ty Templeton was bringing up, that, like, when you have a character, like, Marvel or DC one, who's designed by committee, like, who is to say who really created that character? Like, you know, there's the person who came up with the initial idea, but it might be writers that come on afterwards who kind of make the quintessential version of the character that everybody loves. Like, you know, Rob Liefeld created Deadpool, but the Deadpool that people think of as Deadpool is not Rob Liefeld's Deadpool. Like, if they made a Deadpool movie, would you be, you know, giving the money to, like, Rob Liefeld? If, like, you know, if they were saying, like, all right, we want to do right by creators and pay the original person who came up with this idea, like, do you give it to Rob Liefeld, or do you give it to the person who decided that, like, Deadpool should talk to his text boxes and, you know, just be a funny dude?
Yeah, of course, I always thought that the character of Deadpool was a bad rehash of Ambush Bug from DC. Yeah, we're breaking the fourth wall and all that. So, I mean, yeah, what's the original point? What's the original thing? And it, yeah, as much as I hate to say it, again, as we said, legally, Marvel is absolutely right in what they did. They were protecting their copyright. Was it a bad move on their part? Absolutely. No matter what, Marvel was going to get reamed over the coals because the fanboys were going to rant and rave. However, let's bring this over, because when we talk about the situation with Friedrich right now, let's bring this into the big discussion which people are having about whether or not to do sketches at conventions for characters that you don't own. From personal experience, I know that good artists, and even bad artists, can make a decent amount of money at a convention doing sketches for other characters, whether they've worked on that book or not. And we've got people out there saying, you know, don't do sketches anymore. Marvel is going to come after you hammer and tongs. But is that true? I mean,
I don't think that that's really that true. I think that you're putting a horrible face on something. I mean, can you imagine a convention coming in to have an artist alley and saying, no, you're not allowed to do sketches? I mean, the attendance would go down by half.
Some of them do, though. Maybe not so much in the comic convention community, but in the anime convention community, there are some conventions, usually the big ones like Otakon and other large ones like that, that have a no fan art rule.
Huh.
One of the big ones in Toronto, either Anime North or Fan Expo, tried to put something like that in. Like, they were saying, like, no one can sell fan art prints, but there were so many people who just revolted that they were like, oh, shit, we're not going to have any artist alley at all.
Oh, yeah, even at the conventions where it's banned around where I am, you know, sales still happen on the sly. And like, individual commissions are allowed since they're for a specific person and they're not being, you know, copied. But, like, prints or, like, you know, even like buttons that you have multiple copies of, you know, some.
But again, I mean, that's apples and oranges there, because original art creations, you know, having somebody sit down and do a sketch is completely different than printing off prints for characters that you don't own, even if it's your own art, to printing off doing the buttons or doing ID badges that aren't just reproduced. I mean, because then you've got the original content versus the reproduction.
I think it always surprises people that I have this stance because my comic is basically like making fun of video games and comic guys, but like I really do have an issue with like just selling flat out prints of like other, you know, like if I just drew like here's a picture of Ganondorf, like I wouldn't sell that. I would feel weird about that. Like the only things I try to profit off of are like things that are their parodies or like making, you know, it's like if it could pass by like Robot Chicken rules, then I'm okay with it. But yeah, it's like, I mean, I'll go and I'll do sketches at conventions, but I just do them for free. Like, I don't, you know, because I feel weird being like, yeah, pay me for Batman or something. And there was actually a few years ago, before I got a job, I was, like, paying rent by doing $5 head sketches on DeviantArt. And most people were asking for their original characters, but every so often you get like, oh, draw me Batman. And I wouldn't just draw Batman. I'd draw, like, you know, Batman making pizza pops or something, because I'm like, as long as it's, like, something that's kind of funny, then I don't feel so, like, morally kind of twisted over it.
See, and I do agree with an artist charging for fan art, simply because it's not the character that they're selling. It is their time, their effort, yeah, and their work. It just happens to be something. And it is because of the request of the creator. And they are not, I mean, even those, I've seen a lot of people who do art, and they will put in the style of original artist, thereby giving creator, or putting down, you know, the little copyright DC, copyright Marvel, stating that they do not own that character. They are just simply being hired to do this.
Well, did you see the list that Andrew Hussey put out recently over, like, you know, he was basically putting out, like, a definitive, kind of like, this is what people are allowed to sell in terms of, like, Homestuck stuff. It's kind of like, you know, he was saying you can sell individual fan art commissions, you can't like make prints and sell those or advertise yourself as a Homestuck artist and like physical stuff, like making anything that he has in his store or, you know, things like that were kind of frowned on. And it's like, yeah, I feel like that's a decent enough thing to live by. Like, you know, you can sell personal commissions, but don't just sell like flat out, you know, this is somebody else's character, like, yeah, on a print.
I mean, realize that unless it's your character, somebody else owns that and you're selling your interpretation of it. But if you're going through and making Batman figures, I mean, unless there's something which you can't find somewhere else, I mean, a little plushy Batmans or something like that, boy, that's a good selling idea. That's my idea, nobody take it.
I think I've seen those at Walmart.
God darn. But go ahead and, again, realize that it's somebody else's character. And even if it's a big conglomeration like Marvel / Disney or DC / Warner, yeah, it is their character. It's their baby. It's their idea. It's their ownership. And it's their money.
Well, I try to think, like, what would, if like, other people were, you know, selling stuff of my characters, like, what would I want people to, like, step forward and defend me on? And, you know, if somebody, like, I remember, like, when Hussey put out those, like, his kind of rules of what he wanted people to make, people just revolted. Like, they were so angry that he didn't want them, like, selling Legions of Homestuck print and saying, like, I'm a Homestuck artist and stuff. And it was, like, people just totally turned on him. And, like, he had, I don't really pay attention to Homestuck much beyond, like, what I hear kind of going through Tumblr about it, but there was something, like, yeah, he had, like, some albums or something that had, like, they sampled real songs, or they were kind of like Weird Al style parodies of real songs or something. And, like, he had fans who were trying to get, like, him into, like, legal hot water over those, because they wanted to punish him for daring to like exercise his copyright. And it's like, people can just turn on you so fast. If I ran into a problem like that, where people were like, you know, if they were selling t-shirts with one of my characters on them or something like that, I'd want to be able to say, like, hey, could you please stop that, without people like, ah, well, you draw all these like original characters from other people, and, you know, you're always making fun of video game characters. So I feel like as long as I keep it in parody, it's kind of, you know.
And some of it, I mean, because we can cross over with Bill Watterson, the creator of Calvin and Hobbes. I mean, he didn't, he owns the rights to that, but I mean, we're seeing things that, you know, he wouldn't appreciate. The infamous Calvin stickers on the back of pickup trucks, urinating on logos or whatever. I mean, come on, folks, is that really, somebody's making money off of that, and it's not doing it, well, this is his character in my style, they are directly emulating it. and things that the character would not be doing.
I forget what the exact like legal loophole that happened on that was, but it was something like he wouldn't license the characters for products because like he didn't want to see, like he was worried that they were going to make like plush Calvin and Hobbes all over the place, and they were going to make a TV show, and they were just going to like jam it in everybody's faces until everyone was sick about it, and they'd make a TV like the show would put down like hard and fast rules over like, you know, whether or not Hobbes is real, and like, you know, put a box on Calvin's like imagination, and he was like, I don't want any of this happening. But by not licensing it or something, like there was some kind of break in the wall for bootleggers to just come in and get away with making all these like Calvin bootlegs.
Yeah. Yep. So when it comes to it, folks, in our opinion, and we are not lawyers, we only play them on TV, doing convention sketches are fine. Selling photocopies or prints of your sketches is not fine. Selling reinterpretations of a character is fine. Selling merchandise that you've created that looks exactly like something that you can buy in the store is not fine. So when it comes to things like this, I mean, always remember, step back, take a breath, take a look at it honestly, and if it's something, put yourself in the other person's shoes. You can take a look at what it may be, Marvel, or it may be DC, it may be Dark Horse, or many others, but would you want someone doing this to your characters?
No, you wouldn't.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and go on to our next topic for discussion, and that is from the article on how to co-create comic books over at parkerspace.com, where it's talking about, again, protecting yourself. Where does ownership lie if you are a writer or an artist and you hire somebody else or work with somebody else to create a character? There have been a number of... as they say in there, a number of unhealed wounds in comics, such as the prequels of the Watchmen comics, the Gary Friedrich ruling on Ghost Rider, and the extremely laughable Walking Dead lawsuit.
I hadn't heard about the Walking Dead one.
One of the original co-creators, well, alleged co-creators, is suing for the rights of it.
Mm.
It's silly. It's silly. It's a California lawsuit. But when you work with someone, where does ownership lie? And we can read through the article. We'll have it linked to over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. But let's go ahead and talk about it, because we've got... Eric, are you still there?
I think Eric has left us.
Eric has left the building. Okay, so that leaves me on the side of the sole creator, a writer-creator with absolutely no artistic talent, versus Kelly and Alex, who are writer-artists.
Well, my boyfriend does a webcomic called Glamrock Gorilla, just at like glamrockgorilla.com, and it's set up like so he's writing it and he's got like a few artists on board. He started working on it with a different artist a few years back, and he made sure he got her permission. Like she got to a point where she told him like, I can't work on this anymore. Like my life is too hectic. I don't have the time to make a comic. And he made sure like he kind of got her go ahead before he went off and like approached other artists about it, because he felt kind of like this was something that they made together and he didn't want any like bad feelings between them, and just make sure that she was okay with kind of him trying to move on with the project. But I mean, if the person you're working with isn't like your friend that you can just kind of hug it out with like that, you probably want a contract in place to say like, this is what you made, this is how much you own of it, like I can do this or I cannot do this, and like just hammer out the specifics. contracts protect both people.
Absolutely. That's one of the things, the big proponents that Eric is of contracts. Even if it's your best friend who's doing this, you don't know what's going to happen down the line. We can look at the friendship between, back to Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, where Stan Lee had an idea and Kirby created the look, fleshed out the personality, created the story, interpreted the stories and wrote them out, and basically was the creator of a character. Where does that lie? It really is... If you're hiring somebody to do it, make sure that you've got everything straight in the beginning. I mean, draw those boundaries. Okay, I'm hiring you on to do the artwork, and here's my ideas. But also, don't downplay the creation from that. I mean, as an artist, I am completely in awe, excuse me, as a writer, I am completely in awe of artists and how they could take my written description and turn that into something that I would never expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, I don't know, like, the stuff I've done, because, I don't know, the same guy behind Glam Rock Gorilla, there's a project that, like, the two of us are working on that, you know, that was kind of, like, how I met him, I guess, was that, like, you know, he hired me on to work on this thing, and I treat it like a work for hire. Like, I just, they give me character descriptions, and I do them, and if they went off and, like, you know, made a movie out of this or something, like, I wouldn't feel like they owed me more, I guess, just because, like, you know, we agreed on, like, this is what I'm doing for you for, like, this many dollars. Well, I guess if, you know, if they were going for some medium besides comics, like, if they took it to another comic artist and said, like, draw these characters, but if they were going for, like, a TV thing or something, it's going into that whole range of, like, you've signed, like, you've agreed on rights for, like, this many mediums, so, like, if you're taking them to something else that was not agreed on, then you gotta, like, kind of rehash something out. Like, you know, if you think you're just creating something for a comic, and it's like, no, we're actually making, like, a book and a TV show and a movie and all this stuff, and it's like, yeah, okay, this is beyond the scope of the original agreement.
Absolutely, and how much work is being put into it. And the last section of the article over at parkerspace.com brings up some of the points to discuss. You know, for example, did you count concept sketches as the artistic contribution? I mean, did they come up with the sketches and that influence you as to the way that you want to put the character? If you're writing, are you paying this artist? If you aren't, I mean, you've got to give them something. I mean, they're not just doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're contributing something for their time and effort. If you pay them, at least that's something. If not, a little bit of credit and a little bit of ownership isn't going to kill you.
I actually, I heard about one of my teachers used to do a, like a kind of printmaking and logo design stuff business. And that was kind of how she put herself through college. And I guess she had a friend who had this like company they were trying to get going. So she designed a logo for them. And then they ended up like not really going anywhere with it. And they sold the company and somebody else take it. And they brought it into this like really big, like nationwide thing. And, they had the same logo that was done as like a freebie. And so she didn't like see anything for this logo.
That's always one of the risks and dangers of doing stuff like this. But I think that's good. Pretty much going to do it. We've got about just a few minutes left in our podcast. Kelly, you want to talk a little bit about the article that we have from Sean Kleefeld, our good friend Sean Kleefeld over at MTV, and sales versus marketing. We'll go ahead and hand it over to you to talk about that just a little bit.
I was just thinking that, you know, it's like our, I don't know, it's a really interesting thing to look at it. Like, you know, you're selling yourself, but you're also selling your comic. And so sometimes, like, when you're selling yourself, if people don't really like you, then, you know, it can kind of come around and bite you. And it's just like, you kind of have to decide, like, are you just going to be like, hey, screw the haters. Like, I'm going to put myself out there and, like, I don't care. Are you going to try to, like, get as many people as possible and just, like, keep your personal... And I mean, people have gone into this, like, you know, ad nauseum with, like, Scott Adams and Doug Tenapple and like all these people who say something kind of like big and abrasive and get people like in a fight with them. you know, they say like, you know, would Dilbert, like if Scott Adams was selling himself as Scott Adams and not just like, you know, the creator of Dilbert, and he was like putting his like pretty, you know, I don't know, almost frightening views about women like out there kind of hand in hand with his comic, and, you know, like every Dilbert had a little editorial piece under it, like, he'd obviously not have the same kind of success that he has now, and with a different crowd of people, and just, like, I don't know, I'm just kind of, like, vomiting words everywhere.
That's but, I mean, I completely understand. I mean, we can look at some of the controversy from Johnny Hart from the long-running comic strip BC, where he put a lot of his Christian values into the comic, and there are people who were saying, well, you shouldn't do that. The comic and the creator are going to be intertwined no matter what. You can't look at Peanuts without thinking of Sparky Schultz. You can't look at Garfield without thinking of Jim Davis. You can't look at Exxon without thinking of Eric Kimball. What you think about Eric Kimball, that's a different matter.
Well, I always like feel like I'm going about it wrong because like most of the like the kind of big webcomic people I follow, they like barely ever respond to people. Like most of them have the comments turned off, and it's just kind of like, you know, I'm here, and they just like let people kind of discuss amongst them. But, you know, I'm on Tumblr, and I'm like responding to people, and I'm kind of less active about responding to my comics or comments on my comic because they're just getting so like
Yeah, that opens up a whole different can of worms, because I can talk about some of the other webcomic creators that I talk about, and I've always been a strong proponent of going through and interacting with your fans. I mean, there's a lot of them that really take the personal touch to heart. Of course, I'm terrible about that. I am a shy and retiring person, as you can tell. But the personal touch does come in very strongly, and yet it does seem that there are some of them where either A, they're ignored, or B, come off very poorly.
Well, it seems like when you respond to people, like, people automatically assume that you're like, just angry about things. Like, you know, I would put something on my blog, and then people would respond to it, and then I'd respond to them, and then somebody else would be like, oh, why are you going off on these angry rants? And it's like, I'm not angry, I'm having a discussion. Like, we're talking. They made a counterpoint, and I'm responding to that.
Absolutely. But let's go ahead, and I want to thank everybody for coming in, such as from alexisguide.net, Alex Heberling.
Thank you.
Our associate news editor, Jason Strasberg.
No problem.
Our vanishing guest, Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com. And from Manly Guys Doing Manly Things over at The Punchline is Machismo, MachismoDotcom.
You can also get it at manguys.com. That sounded horrible. I'm sorry.
That brings a completely different type of webcomic back in.
I was at a convention once where, you know, they were like, oh, introduce yourself. And I was like, oh, I'm Kelly Turnbull, and I do Manly Guys Doing Manly Things. And, oh, I realize I just said that. Okay.
But, yeah, it's Kelly Turnbull. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
And, of course, I'm your host. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Make sure to stop by our webpage over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com for more information, as well as more in-depth look at the stories that we've covered today. And on behalf of all of us, I want to say thank you for joining us, and we'll see you in the funny papers.